Hello, welcome, y'all.
Thank you.
Hola.
Hi. I've got
Hello.
bomb ass pussy in the house with me.
Hey.
What's up?
So, why don't we go around the room and just have a little introduction for ourselves? So, Kitty, why don't you begin?
What do you want to know about me?
Just introduce yourself and.
Okay, hi, I'm Kitty Morena, and I am an aspiring psychologist. I'm a student at PSU where I am studying to get my degree in psychology. I want to work with trans youth, and I would like to work with transitioning people and the people that are in their lives. So working with like a couple relationships, family kind of counseling. So that's kind of what I'm looking to do in my future. But I'm also a member of a kick-ass rock band. Not really rock band, more like a kick-ass queer band, Bomb Ass Pussy.
Or punk rock.
Yeah, we're crazy and we're cray cray. And my seat keeps sinking down. It's the man trying to push me down. I grew up in Los Angeles, and then I moved out to Portland, and you know, that's kind of my story. It's not the whole thing. There's a lot of in between, but that's just my existence, so.
Awesome.
Hi, I'm Joe. I am from Portland, Oregon. I have lived here my entire life. Currently, I am in the service industry, serve tables, make drinks for people to pay the bills. Most of my free time, I have a lot of free time, but most of it goes to the group, also Bomb Ass Pussy. We have been, what am I saying? We've been self-sufficient, I feel, since we've started, and we need to learn how to do a lot of things for ourselves. And we're learning right now how to produce our own merchandise via screen printing our own shirts, making our own buttons with our own hands and messing them all up. And learning the system. I'm not really learning how to make music right now, but I want to learn. I want Chris to learn first because Kitty is already so fantastic at that. But I just spend my time with my dude or trying to find new ways to contribute to the band right now. Fun time.
And my name is Chris, and I'm a queer Latino male, and I'm currently a bartender right now. Grew up in Los Angeles, moved up here to Portland in 2010. I'm trying to open up my own bar right now, or I should say, I'm going to open my own bar right now. That
Hey.
is more Latino-centric and looking to employ lots of queer-identified people because I want to serve my community, and that's part of why I'm so excited about this project and working with two other queer people. And I'm ex really excited to talk about this project.
Awesome. Thank you for that. So I want to begin, this is a feminist radio show. We give voice to activists that pretty much work for the equality of the genders and, you know, all that stuff. But I recognize that the name of the record is called Pussy Rain. To me, that reads as a political statement in itself. I mean, even, you know, the name of your band, Bomb Ass Pussy. I'd like for you, well, my first question is, are you feminist? And the second part of that question is, how do you define feminism? And what is it that, or if you're not feminist and why you don't agree with that or whatever.
I definitely would say that we are feminists, and the way that we kind of define feminism is, not just equality amongst the genders, but like identification within like what even gender identity is. So, I think that we definitely our society is definitely based on a binary system. So it's like men or women, and they each have their ranking. And I think right now with a lot of the issues of transgender coming up front to, you know, like the restroom issue and rights and things like that, and people are becoming a lot more knowledgeable of what that exactly is. I think that we want to look at it more as like an equality of women and people who identify of the sort. it's almost like being able to identify what the patriarchal society is and being able to tackle those issues, because there's a lot of that weight that kind of like mindset has on the female identity, which is very demeaning and stuff. So I think when we first started performing together, we decided on the name Pussy, Bomb Ass Pussy. And Chris definitely is is the one who kind of...
You came up with the title?
Yeah,
it's sort of... it sort of was a snowballing effect. And with Bomb Ass Pussy, it sort of came out of a joke, a Sarah Silverman thing, where she talks about the Pope. And if he could move, if he could sell his house that is a city, and he could feed the fucking world.
Yeah.
And she said, and then you could get all the pussy, whatever your version of all the pussy is. It was born out of that joke. What is Bomb Ass Pussy? Like, what is that? Like, the best thing of... you know, whatever you can think it is. And we definitely grew up really identifying with female rappers who were, because they were disenfranchised women of color, and they had to own their sexuality. They had to own what they were doing.
Yeah.
And so we really, being a queer person and being disenfranchised and being a person of color and just sort of owning that and taking it and just making a strength out of that. And for it not to just be something that you could own, something you could just buy, you know, it's going to be the strength of that.
And I also think that the word pussy has been used to, like, we use it to describe something positive. It's like the best of the best. And it's used in that sense in society, but it's also used as a very negative term, and they use it to demean much of the LGBT community. They try to... call each other pussies to kind of put each other in rankings that are like less than male, you know, less than what a man should be.
Yeah, it's usually derogatory.
Yeah, Joe has this great lyric that's on our mixtape where he says,
something along the lines, was it they really want to know, here's the moral of the story, bomb ass pussies, pussy use is nothing derogatory.
We come with so much more
to cut them like a knife, but pussy ain't a bad word. A pussy gave me life. Somebody say, no, but like really, we're nothing for shock value. We're not trying to be, you know, that I'm not even gonna say the name of that band, but there's another band with the name Pussy in the title.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
We're not gonna give voice to
them. No, but situations like that where you can tell it's obviously for, I mean it just comes down to, if you have a product to sell, you can sell it with whatever name you're going for. You don't have to come with something to try to shock everybody and try to make them think that you're... What is there still shock rock? Like, is Marilyn Manson, is that still a genre right now?
I don't know.
And anyways, you can be what you need to be without having to come with a crazy name. Ours was not to get any sort of attention for that. All of our lyrical content will back up what we say, and we don't. I don't feel we have to. No one's saying that we should defend, but I just feel like everything that we say backs up that we're trying to fight the good fight, and we're doing it for the right reasons. And
yeah. I think it goes to show just where we kind of stand in the way that we use the word. The other bands such as such, or other people who use the word, might be using it in a very demeaning, derogatory way, kind of like putting down of. But I think that what we use it for is very empowering. I think that all of the women in our lives have been very strong, have been role models. We've all looked up to them, and I think within that, it's a lot of respect that we think that we have for the feminist movement, and even that mixed with queer theory, like embracing who we are as queer individuals and knowing what we went through and what our struggles are. So kind of combining a little bit of both of those and being able to give back to a voice to the youth, because when we were younger, we didn't have anybody speaking up for us. And things were a lot different. Things were a lot, I think, people talk about the good old days, but we've learned so much since then.
Were they so good?
Yeah, we have learned so much, and we've come a long way. And I think to overhear people get upset that they're being called out on certain languages that they're using.
Hey, let's not be too PC.
Yeah. Well, no, I know, but people use definitely use certain language to describe things, and I think when they're looking for more of a way out of the screw up that they did. So instead of apologizing, they usually get kind of defensive, and then we come out to this whole like idea like, oh, well, you can't even say anything anymore. But that's not true. You can say whatever you want. Just watch out, because when you say hateful things, people are going to tell you something.
There are repercussions.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. That's, yeah. There's free speech, but you'll get critiqued as well.
You're
for
not
what
free
you
from
say.
Consequence.
Exactly. You're not free from consequence. So can I ask you if you've had resistance to the title of your band name and the album? Resistance from any front, like queer or conservative, like how they have reacted to?
I think we've had a lot of fear of the possibility of that.
As of recent, no, with this current project, no, yeah. Not so much. But okay. Throughout the shows we've done throughout the years,
yeah.
There was this one time in particular, we opened up for a few of the finalists on one of the seasons of Drag Race some years back.
Mm.
And we put on a show. We did like a 15 to 20 minute set. I feel like we had the crowd and it was fun and it was cute. But the next, either that night or the next morning, we looked at the Facebook page. Like, we went to go say, thank you so much for having us. You know, like a good act should do when somebody books you. And I was scrolling through the comments, and there was somebody, some individual in particular, who was coming really hard for us, saying, dear name of event, like, it was really cool to see so-and-so and so-and-so, but you should have left bomb-ass pussy at home. They're transmisogynistic and homophobic, and something along the lines of, ugh, it's not cool to see three white people. I'm not sure if they called us white, but they didn't acknowledge the fact that we were Hispanic. No, yeah. I'm sorry, but, like, we were doing... They tried to come for us for, like, cultural appropriation, too, because of our song Chola with a Gun, which I feel is the only thing that ever gets us in trouble, because people want to assume certain... Well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. And then because of Kitty's lyric and Daddy Issues.
And Daddy Issues, there's a choice lyric there that gets us. But people, they want to come for us first, so they were sitting there saying, you guys are so misogynistic and terrible, and shame on whoever booked you guys. And I was reading this with Chris, and I'm looking at him like... I'm texting him like, we got to like respond. We need to think of something to say and craft it just right. And let's let somebody know where we're coming from. And before we had a chance, like, she was, Kitty was already on it. She goes, first of all, let me tell you.
It was Kitty's.
She really did say that. I'm not going to
make Kitty's, it was Kitty's lyric that she wrote. As a trans person,
say
we're
the line,
speaking
Kitty.
About...
Can Kitty...
Yeah, go ahead.
What's
yeah,
the line?
Yeah, the line is during the song... Okay, so in order to understand what the content is, you have to understand the song. We wrote this song in the content. The song's called Daddy Issues. And they both talk about what it's like to be like gay or to be like a daddy or to have issues along those
it's like
lines.
Different
perspectives involving daddies.
The whole idea is like of a fantasy and what you're willing to give up for that fantasy and how true you are to what that is and true to yourself in order to create that intimacy with somebody yeah. else.
Hence the chorus, like, if you got some issues, take a lay on the couch.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like a therapist.
Of
right.
course I know it. I am a fan, trust me. Just because I don't.
So Kitty's verse starts off exactly the
yeah,
lines.
I'm basically writing from my own perspective in life, and I can only share my own. I can't speak for other people, but in this I use the word tranny because I use it in the sense of something that some gentleman is telling me, and I'm not the one with the issues. This person is the one approaching me with their issues, and in that I talk about the language that they choose to use, and in that one of my other lyrics is so there's a special way that you should learn to speak to me. Because I'm trying to
tell them the actual line. Yeah,
oh.
Of the beginning of your verse.
He says he got them tranny issues, them boys in panty issues. He calls them Transformer X-Men uncanny issues. But he plays them bored ass games, and I got him acting strange. He's spilling waters to stuttering, and then I get the blame. And then it goes on to talk about how
they
he has
picked
changed.
That one word. in that one line, in that one song of the however many we did, and that's all they had to throw at us online. And
they misgendered me too.
Exactly. They did. They misgendered her, and that was the whole issue of that subject.
They called
me
a drag queen, and they misgendered me. So I had to. I felt the need to express their. Misunderstanding is what I would like to call it, because they were obviously misunderstood from the get-go.
First of all,
yes. Comma, first of all. Bitch, comma.
Can we just, like, hashtag first of all?
She came real hard, but she came real smart. And at the end of the whole conversation, they were apologizing to us, and they were trying to interview us for something else. But no, bye. Like, we accept the apology. Don't do your research. You know, we're not here for...
The band page is there, and it shows everything that we're about. Like,
yeah.
They could have easily looked us up on Facebook, whatever.
Absolutely.
They tagged us in it.
Send a message, boo. It's as easy as tagging.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to talk about the record.
Mm-hmm.
It's a long time coming. I've been very excited about it, and it's on Spotify. So if you want to listen to it, you can just pull up Spotify right now, or you can actually go and support the band.
Yeah.
And
bombasspussy.bandcamp.com.
Or just bombasspussy.net.
Yeah, make sure it's bombasspussy.net, because if you just Google bombasspussy, you're going to get a whole bunch of interesting and fun results.
And the .com, too. We will not take responsibility for what you will find it there.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
So how was the writing process and the process of, like, the music production? Like, just how was it, the experience of creating this record?
I think Kitty should start with that. Like, Kitty, she... It really is so amazingly talented. I've known her for so many years, and she constantly is surprising me, and not at the same time, because she's just that, you know what I mean, like that person. And she created a lot of the beats for us and started that off.
She really laid the foundation in terms of, like, the structure for all of the tracks, and even coming through with some themes for us to start to write to. So, yeah, Kitty, why don't you...
I think after we had did the mixtape, which is the very first project that we worked on, I think that we were still so on fire. So then we went into kind of that with wanting to express who we were and stuff. And yet we pulled a bunch of stuff from the mixtape to write on the EP. But the one key component that really helped us out was me being able to get a computer that had a music program on it that I was able to sit for a few hours a day and kind of play with and mess around with and listen to.
I was just going to say, that really goes back to being people who have nothing. Like, it really, for us just to have access to a computer where we could have a program where we could work creatively, that was so much as being like... marginalized people, like, you don't have those tools necessarily right off there. So even to get that, I was so excited, because the music's always been in us, the creativity has always been there, we just never had access in order to be able to articulate that.
Absolutely. Yeah,
we ran into a couple setbacks with this last one, this last EP. We went through two computers that were either stolen, lost, damaged, beyond repair. We lost our tracks a couple of times. This EP came out with 6 tracks. It was supposed to have 8 to 9. We had to push forward. We've been writing these songs for some time, and like Chris and Kitty had both mentioned, if it's not having a computer and then finally getting one and having it break down or get stolen. We also all work, and she is also... Kitty's also in school on top of that, too. So besides all of that going against us, we really didn't have a lot of time to really sit down and cohesively flesh out the ideas that we wanted to, the way that you should when you're in person, being able to give critique, like, right in front of somebody and pointing out little. We are at a good spot right now with the release of the EP that took however long it did. We are on fire to continue the projects we've been working on. This one has been a long time coming, and we're really comfortable and set in it.
Yeah, I will say about the writing process. We really set out when we wrote Pussy Rain, the song, we really set out, like, it was about 2 years ago, and Ferguson had happened, mm-hmm. and there were the emotional climate was very, the attention was very high, and we really wanted to touch on all these subjects that really affected us. And you know, growing up in Southern California and being part of a minority group, and we had written "I Love a Song About Dick," "I Love a Song About Shaking Your Ass," but this was sort of the first time we wrote a song that was very message driven, and it was very important for us to get that across, because it's just one of those things that's inside you that you just really need to articulate. And as like, yeah, as people who go through a struggle, like, you really want to talk about those things. They really make us, I mean, they affect all of us. We really should be talking about those things. And it doesn't mean that it can't be a track that you can jam out to and still be message driven.
Yeah. I mean, it was the title track, like, your rap is very emblematic of, like, or at least the lyric about Ferguson and cannot breathe. Can you elucidate the audience on that lyric? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, in that lyric, well, I said, because Pussy Rain was our idea of our version of, like, the Fugees, If I Rule the World.
Lauryn Hill and Nas.
Lauryn Hill and Nas, sorry. It was of that, like, if we rule the world, would it be any different? And so we're like, if pussy rained.
Say pussy again.
Pussy, pussy, pussy. If pussy rained, like, would it be different? And so I say, like, if pussy had the biggest role in making the law, we caught those officers on camera, now we're taking the fall, and with a pop, 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 another life is taken. Hands up, bash back, consciously awaken. Indict these motherfuckers trying to breaking us down. They ain't breaking us down, because we ain't breaking down. Mm-hmm. So what you gonna do, and what you gonna do, and what you gonna do when they're coming for you? To stop the system crushing us, the dream that all belongs to us, they're making tiny minds of us. So who are you really gonna trust? With racist bigots, Ferguson, the genocide of young black men, just like a war we'll never win, we kill each other in the end. You need to be careful, because we bash back. Mm. And then when I go into the breakdown, I say, excuse me, officer, please help me, I can't breathe. You know, so we really wanted to go there. We really, really wanted to, you know, not allude to it, but it's so dark and it's so dirty. And to just, like, lay it all out on the table. If we're going to talk about everything, let's talk about it.
Yeah.
We've had songs where we talk, like on the past EP and even on the mixtape, where we take stances on things that are political. But this was the first time where there was no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Like, what we put out there is what you're listening to. And I feel at shows sometimes, we've been doing this song for a little while now. But the way that the track is so quick, it's hard to really have that shine at shows, because you really want to be a performer that wants to give them all the words live, but they're you're going to miss some of them. They're going to either not hear them, or I just ran out of breath because it's like the 10th song in the set. But we don't want to play, like, we don't want to lip sync. We don't want to go up there, but maybe I'm not sure what I'm trying to get at here. It's hard for people to really catch the gist of it at shows. Like, if you listen to the lyrics and take time to actually hear it, Chris was doing his speed at best, like, at a quarter time there. He was going super slow. Like, but he was like, seven, 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 seven. You know, it goes quick. You don't always catch everything. But everything that we did right, all three verses were very important to us and very just important that people heard that we did have more to say than just talking about dicks and weed and ass and parties. And
I will say that when I was writing that verse, I wanted it to be almost machine gun like, because the it's so strong in the beat and what I was talking about. I wanted it almost to be like a gun, just like shooting off. So sometimes I feel like live, it's a little harder to hear. That's why I would encourage people to listen to the track.
Yeah, I think that it's really, like, bass heavy. Like, it starts off and it's fun and it's dancey, but I felt like during the process of making it that the personality that it brings itself, like, the song is not disorienting itself, but I think there's something in the whole of all of it where you kind of feel like you're experiencing kind of the disorientation that like we go through on a daily basis, what shows up in our news feed, what is happening in our lives. I mean, we talk about like Ferguson and stuff, but we like growing up in Southern California and like being Hispanic and stuff, like having the people, the men in our lives be locked up and put away for very minor things, you know, and being a person of color, having to experience what it's like to feel that pressure and that anxiety. And I think this is just kind of like our like if we ruled the world, but it was more of like us saying like, if I could say or do anything right now in this time, this is like what I want to do, is I want to talk about this. And I think that that's the best thing to do is to start a dialogue where people can bring to the table what they're feeling. I mean, when we live in a system that is so heavily set on its ways and how it's already been programmed and it runs, and being not part of that system and being like such an outsider, it really gives us this kind of perspective, you know, growing up LGBT and people of color. I think that it really gave us this kind of like, I don't know. When I listen to the song, I'm usually at the gym and I'm running, and it's like a release. It's like it makes me feel good because I got to express what I was feeling, and I don't think that it's even over. Like we finished the song and we wrote it and we put it out there, and now we're gonna promote it. But I think that all of the stuff that is in it is still going on. I mean, my verse, I talk about the poverty cycle. I talk about, you know, I start off with, if I ruled the world and I could have my say, I would take back, we would rewind, and we would do it the right way. And then talk about, like, you know, what it's like to have, like, money control us. And, like, with that in mind, if money controls us and there's greedy people collecting that money, like, what happens to us? We are then controlled because we are now a possession of something that is possessed by other stronger entities, and those entities are the entities that are making the rules, and they're not just entities, they're human beings, and they're making the rules and stuff, and it's just kind of like,
apparently it's still okay to own somebody in a certain sense.
Oh, yeah.
By keeping them marginalized.
Yep.
You're still owning somebody.
I mean, I just recently, I mean, it's so sad, but I just recently found out the 13th Amendment, which is the abolishing of slavery. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's like the 13th Amendment. I don't remember what it is, but it's like, and so slavery would be abolished. And then there's a clause. Y'all know there's a clause.
Yeah.
Uh-uh.
Unless you are incarcerated.
Shut up.
And then with prisons being privatized and all that, they're like, fine.
I mean, like, how emblematic is the first title track, right? Like, starting with gunshots, and like that is the that is like the sound that kind of not overshadows, but like it's the sound that like is abrasive to our ears, but also there's your voices in the back saying all of these very poignant things. And then there is the chorus that screams, like, you know, pussy rain. I think that's just very emblematic of like the American media right now, like how it's violence that is like overshadowing so many of the voices. Mm-hmm. In the United States.
Yeah, I think that definitely that's why in the chorus we're screaming. Like,
right.
Like, even then, it's not, the chorus isn't a dancey chorus. It's not something you continue to dance to. There's a lot more dancing
like
in the lyrical
shout.
Part.
Yeah.
It's a
like
war cry.
It's almost, it's a war cry. Yeah. Almost like it's, and in that you kind of hear what it is it's the coming together of the people, you know, and it, I end my verse with, if we're the people, then what you waiting for? Mm-hmm. And I'm, it's a calling out to like, mm-hmm. to us as people, to be like, are we going to sit by and just watch this? Or are we going to like,
if you're about it, be about it.
Yeah.
And that's why I think I'll continue though. I was like, what you gonna do?
That seems to be the question. So I kind of like want to just take a break right now and like listen to the track. And I'm sorry to the like listeners that like I had to cut it up so much, but the FCC, you know, there are certain things that cannot be said on the radio. So if you want to listen to the track uncensored and in its raw self, you can listen to it on Spotify, but preferably go out and get that track, like, and support the band.
Bombasspussy.net.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the show. I hope you all enjoyed the song. And now I want to direct this conversation towards basically, like, your artistry, your influences, music. So I can begin with, what are your influences?
Whenever I started writing, it always gets traced back to Lil' Kim and Left Eye and all of the femcees. That's an ugly word. Or is that a real word?
No.
The female MCs, just like the pioneers. Yeah. Femcee. It sounds just off to me, but like I love it. Femcee. All of them. There was MC Light and the Brat. There was Queen Latifah. Like, I'm not even trying to list them all off. These are the people who were around and present in my childhood, and I listened to all of them, and I didn't know at the time why I had such a connection with them, and I guess it was just that kinship. Like, they are speaking things that they're not supposed to be saying in society's eyes, and
they're owning their own sexuality,
and they're saying the things that I want to say but I couldn't say because I didn't know I was gay, or maybe I did and maybe I didn't know, but they were really there for me. TLC and Left Eye
And there were people who were being put down for their sexuality and their sexual identity. Some people who were marginalized and looked at less than.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you can fuck this person, whatever, whatever. I'm gonna bust nuts on this person or whatever.
And they continue to get shamed too. They're owning it and they're getting paid while all these other people who are hating on them are doing it for free. And like, they're living like that bitter life, just hating on somebody for doing shit that you're doing on your own too, right? Mm. I don't know. I just really identified with all of the female hip hop throughout the 90s and on.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely think that we've had a huge influence of like hip hop and pop and R&B, 90s R&B. Specifically, I think 90s was like a huge, well, we were growing up during that period. So
yeah.
A lot of our influences come from that like kind of style, and we all kind of like have a really broad sense of what we like in music. So I think like our influences go all the way from like, you know, even like hearing my parents listening to like oldies or like disco music and dancing, you know, and like growing up and having all of those really awesome influences. So there's like hip hop, you know, hip hop, R&B, pop,
yeah.
90s dance music. Oh my God. Like
freestyle.
So all of those songs we really like. But what shines through like is, I think, what really shines through who we are as artists is like our personalities, because we are bomb ass pussy, so we're the best of the best, but I don't think we come with that sense of seriousness to you know what is considered the best. I think that we are also very open to like, it's not just a one-sided, like one person's version of the best isn't going to be another person. So
one thing I will say that I like about working in a group like this is that we all definitely, we did kind of grow up with the same music, but we all have different music that we love. On the mixtape, you can really hear is like, I have much more of an electronic, indie, industrial. Unleashed the mixtape. Which you can also download on bombasspussy.net.
For free.
Yeah. You know, like, I come from a much more, like, indie, sort of gothy, industrial, electronic background. And I think we all grew up with lots of Latino music. And growing up in Southern California with Kitty and I, lots of oldies and, like, just, like, the hip-hop that's coming through there.
I feel like the 90s in general is our sweet spot, where we all like kind of, it doesn't matter what the 90s, like 90s hip hop, 90s R&B, 90s pop, 90s anything, we love it all. And every single, I feel like at least for me, almost every single rhyme that I write has a reference to the 90s, and more we have songs that we want to kind of sample or like reference all day. Just the 90s, I guess, growing up is what influenced us. And like Chris said, all of our music is different.
Bjork, lots of Bjork.
Lots and lots of Bjork. But we all like the same
stuff.
You
surely hear that in our music.
There's nothing that anybody really fought for that anybody else hates. Like, we all collaborate, and we all love all the same things.
Yeah, I think
some like them more than others, though.
I think it's definitely us. Whatever is going on at that time is being influenced by whatever's going on at that time, like between us and what we're talking about. So I think that like picking a song like, you know, Short Dick Man, that was very much we wanted to do a throwback to an old school song that we all just love, that really takes us to a place and it's really fun and it's silly. And so the song itself that we wrote from it, we didn't take a serious
And it's not about body shaming either. It's more of just like a fun throwback.
Yeah. It's a silly song. It's the lyrics are meant to be kind of goofy and funny. It's not meant to be taken
seriously.
It's a satire. Yeah. It's mm-hmm. definitely a satire. And being part of the LGBT community, I think that is you know, something that they used to play at the clubs that we used to go to and stuff. You know, there's that song, and then there's like Heartbreak Song, and that song is all about us. We all of our lyrics are at a different point in dealing with some sort of heartbreak. So it's almost like when you hear the song, you hear the evolution of what's happening. So my verse is first, and it's in my verse I'm talking about experiencing something that just happened. So something that was heartbreaking with a partner. And so I got to talk about some emotional things from my own baggage, but bring that to the song and add that like component of kind of introducing what the song's going to be about. And they had other places
stages,
in there. Yeah, stages of that kind of like, I wouldn't necessarily say it was a breakup. I would say more like the song's about like getting your heart broken and going from there.
Yeah.
Like the different stages of a relationship. We wrote that song with our friend Danny Ward, who sang the chorus also, and she has a beautiful voice.
Beautiful
and she
voice,
really
yeah.
tied it mm-hmm. together. This is also one of the first times via this EP, I mean, not via, on this EP or past, where we've collaborated in the chorus. Like sometimes, actually, I think it might be our first collaboration that we've ever recorded,
well,
besides with Kelly Moe,
yeah,
but on the same EP. We are all about the community and getting to know whoever wants, you know, if somebody can sing, then we want to hear it. We want you on our track. We like to seek out like-minded individuals in the community who want to create arts and want to do music together. Like, we are so open to working with everybody in the community. Like, we have one person who makes some beats for us. Somebody else does our photography. You know, my boyfriend Mike does our photography. Our friend Will helps us engineer things. Our friend Damon Vachet threw us a beat here at this time. We're all about working with
our friend Eric helps us film videos.
Gula, yes, our baby. We are so just grateful to have such a wealth of talent in Portland these days, in the queer community especially. And, we're here for the people, and we want...
Especially, I want to say, like, people who are willing to, who know our message and are willing to go there with us and who are not afraid to help us present those ideas.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So, you mentioned earlier that you're a queer band.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about that? Like, what... I mean, like, I know, but, like, tell the audience and listeners, like, what, you know, what makes you a queer band, or...
I think the word queer, going back a certain generation, the word queer is kind of demeaning. So there's a generational gap on kind of the way where that word is how that word is used. So it's like with queer theory, it talks about taking back like the word and kind of rejecting like social norms, heteronormativity. So I think that why we specifically use the word queer band, and that's one of our self-identifiers, is because we talk about what it's like having those issues, and we try to live our lives, you know, constantly thinking of, well, being reminded that we are LGBT, you know, that's something that we deal with all the time. And I think that having that introduction also links us to the community, and it lets you know from the get-go kind of what we're talking about. So there's no kind of like misunderstanding, like, oh, I'm not sure, but... I think identifying as a queer individual is why we self-identify the band
yeah,
as queer.
I would definitely say for me, it's you know, something that is not just a social norm. The people who don't really identify in that, for me, it doesn't necessarily mean a sexual orientation, because there are a lot of people who
are trans
and who don't identify as queer, you know, and that's, I would never try to identify somebody else within their person, you know, and if they don't identify as that. But I feel like for me, like any outsider, really, who are I talk about queer-minded people, you know, people where we're just sort of like share a lot of the same beliefs and building up a community that is just not looked at, you know, and showcased all the time as like a norm, because we're not looked at as that, even though we are, you know.
That's so interesting. This is something we were talking about in my LGBTQ psychology class, and that's one of the things that somebody brought up was queer being queer was linked to sexual identity orientation, and therefore like heterosexuals couldn't be queer. But I argued in the sense that saying, well, how would you know unless you ask? Because when you're looking at two people, if they present themselves as opposite genders, you're going to make assumptions about them. And there are people who identify as, like, trans people who don't identify as, but there are people who like do identify and like bisexuals, like you see a bisexual in a heterosexual relationship doesn't mean that they don't raise their families with a queer kind of sense of values. Because one of the people in my class has made the joke, like, well, just because you dye your hair an outrageous color and you don't really gender your kids doesn't make you queer. And I said, well, then what does, like, having sex with this sex, you know, having sex with somebody who identifies as the same sexual orientation as you do, and does that identify you as that? So it's just kind of a weird concept to see how people identify. But I do definitely think that queer is queer-minded, and it's not just specifically LGBT, but that's where it strives from, that's where it dominates from. You know, when a parent has a queer child, the family becomes a queer family in some sort of sense, as long as they are accepting of it. So, yeah, that was just a little thing that reminded me of what we were talking about in class, and going back to, you know, the queer theory and self-identifying as queer and sexuality. So,
I mean, like, one of the things that, like, the things that I've been researching lately is this idea, like, you know, like, they're like queerness as a like a resistance to heteronormativity, right? But there is also this new thing. I think it's Susan Strike, I could be wrong about this, but I can, but like the idea of homonormativity. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like when, like, of course you do. Like, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
The idea that like, that there are homosexuals that are now considered normal, right? Because now after the passing of same-sex marriage, that like now homosexual, lesbian, and gay people are normative.
Yeah, I think it goes, I think,
can you,
looking at it in like a in a study, like we gain the sense of normalcy from looking at like scientific studies, which science is a wonderful tool, but sometimes it can be misunderstood or misused. And I think a lot of the studies with learning from this class that I'm in, a lot of the studies from the LGBT community are quite, they come from a kind of like cisgendered, heteronormative, binary kind of attitude. So they tend to question things of this community, and they only look at it as like the gay community. So they leave out a lot of things, like they leave out bisexuals in the studies, they leave out transgendered people in the studies, they leave out they mainly then, and they use the same studies. So what applies for like the group of like 20 cisgender middle class college students who identify as gay that they sampled from, they look at that and they apply that to, okay, well that must work for all gay people, and that must work for all lesbians and all transgender, and that doesn't work. So when we created the sense of normalcy, it kind of came out of this very minimal, very understudied research. And so this research is it is what is being held now, but not it needs to be duplicated or replicated, and people don't really want to do that. So it just kind of sits there as this fact, when it's short of people in the sample, and it's also short of a lot of different factors. So I think it generalizes the queer experience, and it gives this sense of distance, and it's so far away from heteronormativity. So there's no real homonormativity. But as a homosexual, I'm sure I used to identify as a homosexual when I was younger, but I can say for the group that as that, you kind of don't, when you identify more as a queer theory, you don't fit into those studies either. So then what is normal? So I think creating a sense of homonormality, I mean, what would that?
Well, I definitely think it's there's this whole idea of, heteronormativity. You get with a partner, you get married, you have children. And I think for some people, especially in the queer community, it's looked at as a bad thing, But even though those are some values that some people just want, some people just want to partner up and they just want to have kids, and that's their prerogative, I'm not going to judge them for that. And it's not necessarily something that I want to do. I love that story.
So, I mean, the critique is basically do you, for instance, last year at the Pride celebration, with Obama, right? There was that significant moment in which someone within the queer community, Genesette Gutierrez, I think that's her last name, Genesette Gutierrez, raised her voice and spoke back to the source of power, the executive source of power in our country, and said, President Obama. There are still transgender women that are in detention, in ICE detention right now, that are dealing with atrocities like rape and brutality and violence. And then the other queer people, the gay and lesbian people in the audience, booed her and silenced her. So this is an emblematic moment in which homonormativity has come into fruition, right? Mm-hmm. This idea that now that same-sex marriage has come into light, they have the power and the privilege, mm-hmm. and they silence someone from their own community.
I think when you're dealing with intersectionality, that happens a lot. So you're stacked upon stacked, and it's once one sort of intersection gets some sort of freedom, it's so when you look at it for adding race and sexual identity together, so you're looking at gay, we'll look at just gay men, so when something happens to where we get same-sex marriage, yes, now gay men are looked at differently, but then you got to think about it, that really kind of just starts to only apply to the gay white men. Now you need to address the issues of racism in that,
right?
So now so now that experience isn't just so. Within that, you seem to have some people who are we got what we needed, and it's not necessarily there are a lot of people who are I don't need to. And there's a lot of people who just don't understand that the fight's not over, that mm-hmm. that if we're doing this, that we are, and right. and if you look at it, LGBTQ, it used to be gay lesbian, but but we changed that because of the ideas of feminism and such, that men don't have to go first. It's LGBT, but it's a falling along the line. So now that L and G have been addressed, we have to look at the B and the T, and the bisexuality gets really kind of stigmatized
and
in
silenced.
A lot of ways.
And
it gets silenced,
invisibilized,
looked past, demeaned. They're constantly experiencing stigma of you're confused, when in all actuality
you don't exist. Yeah. You're just in this gray space in which
and you must you be hoarse.
Have to pick a side, yeah. right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that has always been
and they get it from both communities. They exactly. get it from both communities.
Because they think that they're greedy, yeah. and that's like the exact opposite because like that's what we're talking about, right? Yeah. How bi people are facing so yeah. like
stigma.
Don't exist. They are out there and they are very real, but I feel like a lot of people look at it like, oh, what a tough problem. You know, mm-hmm. you're attracted to everybody, you know? And yeah. it's not really like that because there's such a – I mean, I can only speak – how do I put this? Okay, so I feel like if a male identifying person is bi, they're gonna look at them like you're gay. Like if a female identifying person is bi, they're gonna look at her like, oh, party girl. You know, that's. I mean, there are obviously so many challenges.
Well, because it still comes down to what a man wants to see. They don't want to see two men together. They want to see, oh, that's good yes. for them. It does yeah. for them.
Yes, that's where – thank you for getting me to that. Yeah. I wasn't sure if I was going to find my way.
But I totally see that within the communities. And we've seen that a lot through history within right. communities. As soon as one group gets a little inch, we still need a marathon. When a door opens for you, you don't close that door behind you. You right. you put your hand back out and you right. bring the other people back with you.
Yeah, I mean like just like a couple of, I think, months ago or like – was it last Pride? No. That like they made a Stonewall film. Did you hear
yeah,
about this?
They made a Stonewall film.
I think we all actively avoided it though.
Yes, yeah, we did. Like we did, like that boycott really worked like well.
I still haven't seen it.
Yeah, I haven't either. Heard it was terrible, but I'm just saying that like that like someone has been given the ability and the accessibility to create the story. Yeah. Well, what did they do? They made the main character a gay white male.
Not only that, but they created him. He was fiction. He never existed.
Exactly. And so
there were real people that they
historical moment, and they erased the people.
I did see that.
They
movie.
Did. They did. Oh. They culturally. Well, they did. They culturally appropriated something that happened to. Even a specific, like, I mean, a black trans woman, right, was the first one to throw the yes. brick. And they took that.
Marsha
they
P.
Took,
Johnson.
They took her. They took her significant moment that showed that, like, there was change coming. And they gave that to somebody else that was more appealing. And that just yeah. goes back to show, like, what is considered the norm. And, yeah. like, when they're pulling research from only – like a small group of people or even a large group of people and those people all identify as the same. They're all like middle class, college going, white, cisgendered men. And you're asking them what they think about the world. You're getting a very painted view. And then that's being shared like, oh, and then on Facebook, everybody's like, oh, I read a study that did this. No, you didn't read a study. You read a headline of an article about a newspaper saying science says this. And when in all actuality, it's a glamoring,
click and bait.
Yeah, it's definitely. I'm trying to think of the name. Damn it. John Oliver does a great piece on scientific studies and how people don't even read the studies and they're announcing it on the news and it's like it's like a game of telephone when it starts off with the study has this and this and this and then the people that put money into the studies, the people who produce them are like, well, that's not like sexy enough. How do we sell this study? And then so words are changed and then you end up going from like a sulfur component having to do with the metabolism to people saying, oh my God, farts cure cancer. And it's like, what? If you smell farts, you cure cancer. And that's not, that was nothing to do with the studies.
I thought there was butane in farts.
Butane in farts. I think it's sulfur. Methane.
Methane.
Or
okay.
something. I don't know. I'm not a biologist.
Well, we're not science majors.
Yeah. We're not science majors.
No.
but you get what I'm saying. It's the misunderstanding, and it's the being like, oh, okay, it says this, therefore that's what it is.
The miseducation.
Miseducation of the simpletons.
The simpletons.
Wow. Okay, so let's take a break real quick, and then we can come back in a bit. So listen to this track. And welcome back. We were just talking about Pride during our break and didn't make any reference to it, but happy Pride.
Happy Pride.
Celebrate. Be happy to be who you are. Don't go spending all your money, though.
For real. So on that note, I want to talk about pride, mm-hmm. what it has become.
That's why I made that comment.
Thank you. Yeah, you're on top of it. You got it.
Last year I was on the bottom. My back's still sore.
Okay.
Wait, what are we talking about? Pride?
We're talking about pride.
We're talking about what happened afterwards at the after party.
I don't remember that.
Mm-hmm. None of us remember that.
Yeah, that's true.
Happy Pride.
I just came to the next day, you know? No, but seriously. Pride. So, like, Pride has definitely changed, or at least I've always known Pride to be very, like, it's all about
commercial. Making money.
Yeah, it's very commercialized. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, like, in L.A., you know, where we grew up, you paid $20 to get into Pride, right? But now it's like I heard that, like, you're paying much more to experience a concert in Pride. And there are some organizations, grassroots organizations and, you know, activists that have been using the hashtag not our Pride in resistance to that new marketing scheme that, you know, Los Angeles Pride has. Can you talk a little bit about that and what you think about that, how you feel about that, et cetera?
I think that it's kind of it's something that's supposed to be celebratory, that is celebrating community and union, that is supposed to be bringing people together, that's the original concept of it, has just kind of turned into another place for marketing and advertisements and corporations to get their hands on and show you that they accept you, so come buy their product. And I think that I remember growing up being super excited to go celebrate and be surrounded by people and be in, like, a utopia of, like, gayness and being in a place where I didn't have to feel the constant stigmas that were kind of going on in everyday normal life, you know, in a heteronormative world, all the judgments. Yeah, but I mean, I also grew up like pretty poor, so I could, you know, was able to scrounge up money to get in the festivals, but it was always just kind of hanging out, dancing, listening to music, spending time with friends. But there was tons of other things to do. But I think that's what it becomes about. It becomes about, like, what you can spend and how much you can afford, and it becomes a bit elitist in the sense of they're charging large amounts of money than people who have the luxury at their leisure of excess money to be able to spend on something like that, and it denies the people who can't really afford to do something like that. So then it becomes about, like, it's no longer about the community coming together, but it's about a gay event that is, if you could afford to come to, you know?
I do remember growing up, Kitty and I went to my first Pride, and
Which Pride was it?
It was in Long Beach.
Oh, okay.
And I remember going there, and I'd never been to, and so Kitty and I went, I grew up really hardcore Catholic, and my parents, I was in trouble for anything. And used to lie to my parents when we would go. We used to go to, our friend Steven had a car, and he would drive us to West Hollywood, and we would, like, buy ice cream and, like, just watch gay people because we heard there was a place where there was a bunch of gay people. And just to be a part of that community, they were there, yeah.
There was a lot of them, and we would step over the little mini fence and sneak in the clubs.
But it was, for being a kid, wild back then. We didn't drink. We weren't
doing that. We just wanted to be wild.
No,
yeah, we were just so happy to be, like, we're like.
For somebody to tell you no, it's not okay for you who you are. Who to be, and then there aren't that many people around you, especially seeing adult gay people and living their lives. That was so exciting for us, and so going to Pride, that's what I was looking for, and all I got was a bunch of flyers and techno music,
condoms and lube.
You know what I mean? Like, I mean, no hate on techno music, but, like, oh, that's all we got was flyers and techno music. What I was looking more to, like, engage with adults. Not, like, necessarily like that, but, like, engaged with them. And we were lucky enough to have a queer mentor when we were growing up, our drama teacher, where we never really spoke about his sexuality, but we had an older adult who spoke to us like adults. He didn't speak down to us, and who was really, you know, who was teaching us about Tennessee Williams, and that for me is gay community. Like learning about,
and he's queer.
Yeah, he's queer.
Okay.
But just learning about, you know, about the histories of queer people. Like we lost a whole generation of people, and for me, queer
because
community
of the AIDS crisis.
Because of the AIDS crisis, yeah. And to have people around you that were adults that would speak to you about the history of these things. That's what I was looking for,
yeah.
You know, and then pride. Like, I mean, that's just what I grew up with. That's all I've known for a pride to be. It wasn't necessarily about banding together and just creating a space. It's more about, like, you know, partying and drinking, which is, like, fun, too, to celebrate your, you know, yourself and being out and open. But it's just, and just hearing more about how, one of my favorite times in pride is right before I moved here, there was this kid, Marcos, who used to hang out with us. My ex-boyfriend's mother knew him, and his family was very abusive to him, and we took him to Pride, and I lent him one of my shirts, and we dressed him up, and just not even dressed him up, but like, I don't know, skank tag in some shorts or whatever.
She's ready.
But yeah, but just for me, like, taking somebody like that under your wing and showing and embracing them with other queer people and seeing like this is normal, like we're not any different, we're just hanging out and having a good time, like that for me is more community building than just going to, you know, and getting a bunch of flyers. So I do think that is sad that where you have to pay, you know, $50 to go watch a performer who is supposed to be there to engage with the community, you know, to really, like, challenge social norms.
I also think that it's super-duper ironic. I had worked for the overturned Proposition 8, or the Proposition mm-hmm. 8
Prop
for,
8, yeah.
In California back in 2009. And we worked at a gay pride event. We worked at the West Hollywood event. And that was the only day that I had not gotten a contribution during the whole time that I'd worked there on that, you know, being able to talk to people and identify with being LGBT and trying to promote same-sex marriage and trying to get that over, you know, ruling overturned and then being surrounded by people who were there and always and continually being told, well, I'm just here to celebrate. Like, I don't want to worry about things that I go through all the time. Da, da, da. But it's like, we had forgotten what the whole reason for gathering was. It was, you know, power in numbers to show that we are a community and that we are here and there are a lot of us, so that we shouldn't be looked at as a minimal community. You know, we get looked at, we are a minority because of the fact that we're not the majority, but there are a lot of us. There doesn't mean that there is a very small amount of us, and just to be in a place where you're supposed to be pushing forward for our rights and to be told no by virtually everybody, that they don't, that their money is for the event and not for whatever I was asking for
the cause. Yeah.
So it was just kind of a slap in the face for, you know, what we have, where we've come from. And it seems that because we've gotten a little bit of like slack, that we forget where we've come from.
Have y'all ever seen when that meme that's like two pictures and it says Pride, when did it go from this to this, and on one side it's like Stonewall and they're throwing the brick, and then the other side it's like these twinks in pink underwear and like wings and they're on like a parade float, and like I really, it's supposed to be a joke and I laugh every time I see it, but that's really what it's become. Like Pride used to stand for something real, and I feel like now it's just like we were talking about, just big events that cost too much for people to get into. And I mean when I was 18, well, I guess when I was 21, I guess, last year when I was going to Pride, like way like long time ago in Portland, there used to be like the at Red Cap Garage and at Boxes, they used to have the block party. Yeah, the Red Cap block party was there every year, and everybody went to the block party, and that lets you get into like all three of the bars. There was everybody there. There was old people. There was young people. There was all different types, and I feel like there was a lot more. I mean, maybe that's all I knew when I was that young, but it felt like there was community and people were there and everyone was interacting with each other. And you fast forward to what's going on now, not to say that Pride's not – I still have fun every year at Pride, but the same way that I feel like we've lost – our gay bars, like the Red Cap's not there anymore. Boxes isn't there anymore. We're losing so many gay bars. We don't even have a lesbian bar anymore. Like the Egyptian Room, it's gone. We're losing all of them. I feel like with Pride, like a gay party is the new Pride. Like gay parties are the new gay bar. Like no one really goes out to a specific bar all the time unless you do maybe. But there's queer events at all different types of places I feel are a lot more well attended. The parties are more attended than any particular bar in itself is. And with Pride this year, there's like 1,000 different events that you can go to. They're all expensive, but you have options and you have varieties. But it went from, at least in my experience, being one big free-for-all, everybody's here together, to now like 10 different little subsections. Am I going to go party with the Bears? Or am I going to go party with the Twinks? Or am I going to go party, you know, who do I want to spend my Pride with? You can like, it's a la carte. What experience do you want this year? And that's how I feel this year. It's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's very, very different than the environment and the sense of camaraderie that I feel there was once at some point in my lifetime anyways, and before, I'm sure, but times are different now.
You know what? It reminds me of that one homegirl. Everybody has that one homegirl who is like, oh, I'm so happy for you. Now give me money. Right? And I feel
what?
Like, I'm so happy for you. Now give me money. And I feel like it's like, you know, that friend willing to listen to you and your problems but always wants something from you. It's kind of like the whole Pride thing. Like, we're Whoa. Happy that you're gay and we're happy that you're celebrating and we're here to celebrate you, but you have to give me money to get into the event so we can celebrate you.
Okay.
Like, thank you for being gay, but if you can't afford to get in here, we can afford people who aren't gay, who don't identify with the struggle, and we can get their money and let them in because they want to come and see, you know, all of the fun and the shenanigans and... And I think it's a little bit, I'm all for celebrating and I'm all for having a good time.
I'll pay for a party that's good too.
Yeah.
But it's these nothing parties that you walk through and they hand you flyers. Like, why did I pay $5 to walk down this corridor and have paper handed at me? Like, this isn't a party. They might have.
Well, I think I think for me, this is probably just slightly changing the subject, but for me, it's like, I get to go on, I get to give money and I get to spend money to be with friends, or I get to perform at something for a bunch of people, which that's the best thing that I like to do is I like to display like the art and show the message to share it with the people who are going to hopefully best relate to it. But I think for me, it's like you go out and it's that, you know, that night you spent way too much and got too drunk the next morning and you're just like regretting it. And then you're still dealing with the same struggles because I can go celebrate with a bunch of people who are going to hug me and tell me, oh, happy Pride while we're drunk. But I still have... You know, like the struggle of like, am I going to be harassed if I go pee? You know, and like those are things forgotten by the rest of the community during this time of celebration. And I use air quotes because it gets so far away from what we should be doing and it becomes more of like divisive. And I'm not so against the celebration, but when we forget what's still going on to our brothers and our sisters and our other siblings, like we're not doing any good for anybody. We're just spending money and getting drunk because that money's not going to help. The money's not being fundraised for anything that'll benefit our community. That money's being taken and you're being given whatever rainbow vodka or whatever rainbow alcohol or whatever is saying that we accept you today, you know, like you get those insurance people's cards and stuff. Yeah, I'm so glad you're so open to taking gay people's monies. But what does that do for the community as a whole?
I mean, like a community goes like that money would go to you like as you're performing this weekend. Like like that is to me community. Like you've been giving so much to the community. They need to return that. So y'all better tip them when you see them.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, to say, like, the first Pride was not Pride. It was a riot. It was a riot and a resistance to the cops that were like beating them and raping them and killing them because they were different. And most of the time it was just like lesbian and trans women that were being targeted, or they had these like laws that like you can only have like three articles of clothing that were like the opposite of your gender. Mm-hmm. I mean that is yeah, the opposite of your gender, whatever the hell that means.
They didn't
right?
have Target gender neutral.
No, girl,
they
Target
didn't have a
Target.
Target was not a thing yet.
Well, so girl, get them some Target.
So this is the the pride
the
that
colors?
We're this is the pride that we're talking about, right? And now that like we're talking about pride as if it was like a celebratory thing, like that to me reads as if there has been a finality about it, right? That like it has reached to the point where look, oh, it's over.
Look how far we've come.
Look how far we've gone. And I've had people tell me like there's been so much that has happened already that and like we've come a long way, and like you're telling me that like I can't go out and celebrate. And my critique about that is like, great, go out and celebrate, but there's still a lot of work to be done.
For sure.
I mean, only a couple of like 2 months ago, like the bathroom bill has been put in play, mm-hmm. where our trans brothers and sisters and anyone that looks outside of their supposed gender mm-hmm. is going to be targeted by cops. So if anything, we have retreated back to the time in which our community members of the past that had fought back, we have reverted back to that. Mm-hmm. So my question, I want to go around the room and just like ask, like, what do you have to say to like the future queer kids of tomorrow? Like, what
I would say, don't be fooled by the idea of being sold to as acceptance, you know, having like a vodka slap a rainbow and say, we support you, now buy our product. Those things are shaping the way that our country is, because it's like you get that acceptance from those people, and then they start the corporations, and then they start putting that into like everyday practice, like TV shows and all that, because they're trying to sell a product. So like if they can market to the gay people and show that they're accepted, then they get their money. But what about the rest of the community who doesn't, you know, the people who can't afford the product, or the people who don't even watch TV to buy products, and are the people who identify as LGBT but don't go out to the events and don't get marketed to in this sense. So I think for me, just even thinking about everything, you got to kind of be careful with what you're being told and what where you think that we are, because during this idea of celebration, you can kind of forget exactly where our place is in life and where the LGBT community actually is in this, you know, sense of heteronormality. And there's a lot more intersectionality that just goes. So when you feel like, oh yes, our fight's over, it's not over, because it's our fight. It's not just your fight. And just because you feel like your family is accepting of you, or your friends around you are accepting of you, that the fight's over, because you don't feel the pressure that the rest of the community's feeling, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like also I'm gonna sound like such an old man right now, but like I feel like I'm shaking my fist at like the youth of America at some of the blatant disrespect I've seen directed towards older queers, and they're gross and they're old and blah blah blah, and just such disrespect. Like a lot of children don't
adolescents youth
work, yeah. They don't realize that as hard as some of them might have it, they have it so much better than a lot of us did, and a lot of people before us did too. Like the reason that, you know, while we still have so far to go, I want to say that I am here for the small victories. Yes, you should celebrate pride, but don't be blind to the fact that there are still like awful, terrible things going on every day in your community, in your city, in your country, you know, everywhere. Take the small victories, but demand more and go out and get more. Fight. Be good to your community, old, young. Like, we're all trying to get through life. We're all just, you know, here trying to be good to each other. Just be good to your fellow queer, I guess. Not to say everybody has to be best friends. You don't even have to like somebody, but like give the friendly head nod. Just be a decent person to your fellow neighbor, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would say one of my favorite shows we've ever done is we did a free show, not that we make a lot of money, but for the Queer Rock Camp. And so we were extremely fortunate to be able to do that. And so this is a group of across the board, queer, identified, trans, everything, young kids. And it's for us as performers, we're more of a 1 a.m. sort of group, and we're performing at at 12 p.m. you know, in a cafeteria, because this is what the work is about. And I will tell you this, chatting with the kids after we performed, I feel like a lot of them see through the bullshit that they know they're being lied to. I think a lot of them just chatting with them, I think they already knew. When doing certain songs, when they heard specific lyrics, they were right on board with that. And they knew, like just speaking with them, they're very intelligent. Yeah. I feel like there's a lot of social media that is lying to them. But I feel like more and more there are like internet communities are, you know, banding together, and people like us, like if you have a platform, it's your moral obligation to make a difference. It really is. And that's just my belief. You know, people don't necessarily have to adhere to that. But there are a lot of things that make me sad sometimes when I see about the youth and internet and that stuff. And there are a lot of things that I see are big positives. And engaging each other in those communities and being able to perform and be a part of a forum like that, I just felt it gave me hope. Like this is what the work is about. It's not just about us, you know, being on stage and having lights and making music or whatever.
I didn't mean to sound so cynical before. Not all the youth are bad. These kids were so amazing and great. And I should have led with that before I tried to trash the kids in America.
No, I don't think. But I mean, just, you know, that's. I feel like we all feel the same way about that, but I just felt so affected.
But I mean,
that.
Like basically, it's the same coin, right? There are woke kids, uh-huh. and there are not
sleeping kids.
Yeah, there are sleeping kids.
It's just refreshing to see that there are some out there, because I wasn't expecting to see any. Like I see what I see on TV. Like what interaction do I have with, you know, queer youth right now? You know, I don't work with anybody who's underage. I don't work for schools. You know, there'd be no reason. I don't really know how kids are on their day-to-day basis. I just see from when I get on reality TV and what I gather when I walk by elementary schools and hear that hear the way they interact with each other. I can't base them all on that, but like it's hard not to.
I definitely feel
but
so
I mean,
much
like they're your fans too, right? Like you have a queer youth fan base too.
Do you want to direct us towards them? Because I haven't had.
No, I'm just like that's what I heard.
I would feel so much more confident performing this record than our past work for the youth, because it is more we're just in a different place. You know what I mean? We started writing
definitely
music.
Definitely evolved with this record
for sure. Like we definitely started off like we're, you know, people who are over 21, and we like I work in a bar, and we like we're performing bars, and that's just always been our thing. But I feel so much more confident performing this record, especially because they are more message driven and whatever curse words they swear way more. They swear more.
Violence
way
is
more.
Worse.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And so we'd be talking about these things. It's like really important. And I would be, you know, more interested in performing for more of the youth, because they don't always get that. There aren't a lot of groups necessarily that I know that they're, you know, that are doing that, especially just in our community, yeah, not necessarily online.
I think it's definitely a treat for the youth to be able to experience something like that, to be able to actually have things that they can relate to that uses the same language that they identify with, other than filling in the mental gap of like, oh, well, this doesn't really apply to me, but I like this song a lot. But this is like stuff that they can actually relate to. And I know for me, like growing up, finding out an artist was like gay or closeted or just came out or something, and I liked their music really made me identify with them a little more and made me understand like somewhat of where they were coming from. But I think
you can see a shard of yourself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I also think that when you come out swinging, like whether you're accepted by mainstream or not, like if you come out saying like I am proud to be LGBTQ and like start off with that belief from the get go, then you. I think it comes through in like the who you are as a person, and for them if I would have gotten to see somebody like Chris was saying earlier, when we got to see the adults around us being gay and open and loving themselves and having full self-sufficient lives, it made us realize that that it wasn't such a wrong thing. Yeah, and it seemed attainable, and it seemed like that the world wasn't going to fall apart for being who we were, because we had each other, and that there was more to it than just what we were going through at that time. Mm. That there was the future, and that's something that we've always talked about. You know, growing up together is the future that we would have, and I definitely see that a lot of the things that we have talked about.
Stole that thought right out of my head. Yeah. Yeah. We share half a brain.
Yeah.
We love each other.
Like I said, going to West Hollywood and just doing that, we were just eating ice cream, but having that visibility, just seeing people living their lives
for that moment, it's
completely normal. Because it is.
We've only been asked to do two all-ages show, and we said yes both times. Like, if anybody else hears this and wants to get at us, like, we would love to play a show. Mm-hmm. We just don't have the opportunity. Like, when we get asked to play shows, it's this bar for this party, for this pride, for this that. And we love playing for all different types, and we just hopefully that'll work out again for us soon.
For sure. But, yeah.
So, our time is really coming to an end.
We really
killed
it.
And I hate that. There's one more thing that I want to talk about before we go, and that's basically there's a track on Pussy Rain, and it's called Chola. Now, I grew up with Cholas. I'm from East LA as well, and like that was the culture that I understood as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about this track and what is the chola?
You should totally take that question.
Okay. The song actually started off as like it the song is basically a tribute to my mother. It's kind of a reflection of going back.
La Angel.
You know, the struggle that she went through, and what it's like to be a Latin woman dealing with the lifestyle of the gang life. But I think more chola has become much more of an interpretation through writing it is chola is the character. Chola is who I am going to grow up to be because of my mother's influence. So the song is a tribute to my mom, but chola is me through growing up. It's almost like who I would have become if I was cisgendered, but because I am transgendered, I have this other tale to tell. So I think that Chola's just saying who I've become through learning that. And in the song, it talks about Chola having a gun, but it's a metaphor. Like we don't promote mm-hmm. violence. We don't promote anything in that sense. What the gun is the gun is like ammunition. It's like bullets. So like
power.
It's power. So what Chola is doing is she's finding the power in herself. She's finding the power in gaining knowledge and in trying to better herself. She's and fight the system that is continuously trying to oppress her and bring her down.
What is a Chola? Can you define that for our listeners?
Well,
in your definition.
And my definition of a chola is a Latin American or Chicano or Mexican or you know Latin specifically Latin, just because chola is different from just gang member. But yeah, chola is a woman empowered, dealing with the things that are happening in her life. Usually comes from like a lower income neighborhood where there's a lot of gang violence a lot of police brutality coming to the people who live in that area. A lot of people being arrested and locked up for very small things that they've done. So it's just like Chola is just trying to deal with life as it is. But yeah, Cholas usually belong to some sort of gang or Cholas are gang members, basically. But in the sense of the song that we're using, it Chola is her gang, is her family. Her gang is the people that are dependent
upon her. The community.
The community. So in my aspect, Chola is my community of my Latin community, but also my LGBT community. within that. So it's like the song Chola starts off with Chola is a homegirl who is packing the heat, but the heat is her brain, because she's because she's smart, she's got a good head on her shoulders. Although she doesn't have much, she's able to kind of filter through through life with that. And so it's, the song's really like an empowering song about bettering yourself and knowing who you are, but not moving out of that and denying that, and looking, it's like looking back and being able to say, yes, that's who I am culturally, that's where I come from, and I'm proud of that. Not to be ashamed because you've gotten out of that, but to be proud of you because you've gotten out of that and because you are.
Just to expand on that a little bit, I feel like, you know, through the writing process, sort of found out that you know, Chola, her as a person, is a loaded gun. And then when she arms herself with education, when she arms herself with the ability and to do that, she can't be stopped. And that's why, you know, they keep trying to press minorities down, because we're fighters, and we're not going to just be taken down.
Yeah.
You know, and she's, I say Chola's got a motherfucking gun, and she's a pissed bitch. So it's like, we're making the video right now, and there's no guns in the video. We have like Chola like getting her GED, her arming herself. We have this big piñata that's a big brick wall that we're going to be smashing, you know, with
breaking
a bunch of Mexican candy. Because like, you're trying to, Chola, our communities are so strong. And that's why I feel like a lot of gangs form, like building communities, like trying to band together, you know, because there's so much onslaught just against them. And you should be scared. Because when she gets her education, she's unstoppable. When she gets those opportunities, you can't stop her. Yeah. She will take every job that you need.
Knowledge is power.
Knowledge is power, and they keep trying to put her down. And so that's you know, where the kitty's mom used to donate bone plasma to buy them milk. She will do anything. And so when somebody who is willing to do anything to get just her basic needs, you better be fucking scared when she is well armed with the education.
Yeah.
Because she will take every opportunity she can to provide for herself and for her family.
Yeah. Joe?
Yeah.
Do you want to talk a little bit about the Chola in Portland?
I really feel like the Cholas in Portland? Oh, I can't speak on that. No.
I would say
talk about your verse, how it's the only verse that's in.
Oh, it's the only verse on the EP that's in Spanish.
It's the only verse out of any of our songs that's in all Spanish. It's a direction we want to go into.
Okay. Kitty had brought the idea. I think it was Kitty's idea initially. She wanted to write the song Chola, and it was, like she said, it was half based on her mom. And Chola is also just a character who represents all of us who are trying to like make it with what you have, you know, or more so despite what
access.
You have or do not
access.
Have. And like we said, it's not rooted in violence. Chola, you know, like Chola's been packing the heat. In sports, they say they're coming through with the heat, you know, all the time. Mm-hmm. You can say that. Like, so we can like move away. It's not really so much about being violent. But where was I going with this?
But you can see how like conservatives can pick that up and like think, oh yeah.
I think that's absolutely kind of why
a lot of liberals have picked that up.
But that's the same way like how we referenced like not too long ago. If you want to take one particular line and not, you know, read into the rest of the song and see where the context is, and yeah, anything can sound any which particular way to anybody. Like we said, not about violence, but Chola is very much by any means necessary. She's going to get the job done. You know, she needs to feed somebody. She needs to, like, watch out for her family, whatever she needs to do. And that's just basically, like, it's just a reflection of how we think things should be. Like, be about your people. Be about what you want to get done. Look out for your own. Just not trying to look for trouble or cause, you know, rile anybody up. But just being about your business.
She will defend her family.
Defend her family. Defend your people. And, like, I feel like that could extend to the queer community. Like I said before, how it used to be that there were gay people and lesbian people and trans people, even though back when, you know, they weren't, you know, people weren't talking about that. They were there.
Like,
everybody was there.
In the queer, you know, like, discourse, they say that, like, okay, and, like, oftentimes the Chola is associated with the idea of the welfare queen, as much as, like, you know, black women as well, right? And if we're going to, like, take up the idea of regulating your sexuality, right, then Cholas are queer, and black women are queer.
Yeah.
And people, because our bodies are being regulated, mm-hmm. by our sexualities and our bodies and who we get to desire and who we get to love and how often we get to love.
Yep.
So
absolutely.
Yeah. So absolutely. Like, but the thing is, it's like we, the association, it goes back to what you were saying, Chris, that like, someone like wouldn't, connect with, the queer label, because they just don't connect with it. But to me, it just reads the same. We are all living under the same oppression. Why can't we just band together? And
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that, Chola is, definitely a song about empowerment and a song about, like, you know, being Latin and being empowered within that, but it's also commenting on being of color and you know, being proud of that. But I think it's a feminist song too, because it talks about everything that Chola is going through. But I think that when we were writing the song too, we were watching this movie called Mi Vida Loca.
Allah.
And in the movie, the women...
She knows the movie.
In the movie,
the listeners.
Yes.
Yeah. In the movie, the women...
what is the name of the movie?
Mi Vida Loca.
My crazy life.
Yeah, my crazy life.
And in the movie, they're facing all the hardships, and one of the hardships is that all their men get, like, they're locked up just because of random picking up of, you know... So the women are left to kind of, like... run everything, and instead of feeling weak and submitting, they decide to band together, and they hold one of the smarter ones who has more life experience. She gets out of jail, and she's like, we need to band together as women, and we need to stop depending on the men, because they're you know, by the time
where are they
they're either they're being shot, locked up, they're dying, they're you know, the women are being left to kind of fend for themselves. So I think that writing that song and thinking about that song, it is based on, like, my mother and me experiencing what it was like to live in a household where, you know, dad was in prison and mom was fending for the family. And she was hardly around because she had 2-3 jobs and would come home and, you know, put us to bed and then sit there studying for her to get, like, a degree in nursing or something, and then having to drop those things because, you know, something's up with one of the kids. So it's, you know, it's definitely, people talk about being a boss, but the song's not about Chola trying to be a boss. She's a mom. So, like, it's
she already is a boss.
Yeah, she, well, that's what makes her boss. She's in charge. Yeah, she's mom. And that's another, you know, not to get, like, hoity-toity, but that's another job that's totally looked over and demeaned and looked at as, like, well, you chose that lifestyle. But, like, raising a child is hard, let alone raising a bunch of kids. And being, like, the sole breadwinner with all the odds already against you because you're a woman of color, living in poverty, welfare, and then you're ridiculed because of that. They're like, oh, you know, welfare case, welfare mom. Yeah. But, like, what other help would we have in that sense?
Right. Yeah.
So. Giggles is the character who gets out of jail, and she says, like, what are we all doing? Right. We're the ones who are getting the shit out of the stick.
Yeah.
You know, and so the first time I heard Formation, that's what I thought, because she says, come on, ladies, let's get in formation.
Yeah.
And she's the one who's telling, these are telling these women, come on.
It echoes let's the get same thing.
The same thing that women have been, especially minority women have been.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you heard it out, everybody. Get in formation.
Yes.
So I think it's been wonderful to have you on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Love you, too. So happy Pride.
Happy Pride,
everybody.
Celebrate, but know that the fight's not over, and actually feel that I would use that time to get empowered, and I would dance my little fucking
save
heart
save some money,
off
drink some water.
Yeah, hydrate yourself. Don't get thirsty.
Mm-mm.
Don't let them take all your money, because they don't even give you nothing in return except the feeling of greasiness and, like, ooh, I can't believe that just happened to me.
So we'll just end on the track Chola.